and may it please the court. The primary question in this case is whether immigration judges and the Board of Immigration Appeals have the general power to terminate proceedings. The court should hold that they do have that power and that the Attorney General erred in matter of SOG by holding that they do not have that power. IJs have the general power to terminate proceedings under 8 CFR 1003.10B and 1003.1D12, the same broadly worded regulations on which this court relied in Romero v. Barr and in Jimenez-Rodriguez versus Garland. And even if the court finds those regulations ambiguous, matter of SOG would not be entitled to any deference because it did not interpret the regulations in question and because the Attorney General did not solicit adversarial briefing from the parties. Unless the court prefers otherwise, I will first address the termination issue before addressing the other issues in this case. Now, at the outset, I would
counsel, like- I'm so sorry. I don't prefer otherwise. I do want you to start with the termination issue, but I do have sort of a threshold question about how your arguments fit together. If hypothetically you win on your first issue, you would like us then to hold that IJs have general authority to terminate and then remand to the agency to consider whether they should exercise that authority based on DACA status, right? All right. If we do that, do you still want us to consider your other argument based on DACA status that also, do you also want us to remand so that the agency can consider whether it should administratively close these proceedings based on DACA status, or are you presenting those more as alternative arguments?
No, they're not alternatives, Your Honor, because in the event that the request for termination was denied, then my client would like to make a request for administrative closure. And if that was denied, he would like to pursue his application for cancellation.
Thank you. That's all I, thank you very much. Sorry to interrupt.
So just at the outset, I would like to address what we believe is and is not the precise question before the court. The question is not when IJs and the board should terminate proceedings as a general matter. The question is simply whether they can terminate proceedings as a general matter. And to answer that question, the court need only consider why it is that IJs and the board can terminate proceedings when DHS fails to sustain the charges of removability. Contrary to what the Attorney General claims, there is no regulation that specifically authorizes them to terminate proceedings when DHS fails to sustain the charges. So that authority must necessarily come from 1003.10B and 1003.1D12, which authorize them to take, quote, any action consistent with their authorities that is appropriate and necessary for the disposition of the case. If those regulations did not confer the general power to terminate proceedings, then IJs and the board would be unable to do so even when DHS failed to sustain. And matter of SOG implicitly acknowledged as much by holding that IJs may terminate proceedings either when authorized to do so by regulation or when DHS fails to sustain the charges. But that holding was self-contradictory because if IJs can only exercise powers delegated to them by regulation, then by definition, they cannot exercise any additional powers not delegated to them by regulation. And in a footnote, the Attorney General argues that a different regulation, 8 CFR 1240.12C, provides the specific authority to terminate proceedings when DHS fails to sustain the charges. But that regulation makes no reference to DHS's ability to sustain the charges. It merely requires IJs to issue an order at the conclusion of the proceedings that either directs the alien's removal from the United States or the termination of the proceedings or other such disposition of the case as may be appropriate. So if anything—
Mr. Winograd, yes. Let me ask you this. Do you believe that the word any action both includes explicit and implicit authority to do something with the case, such as close it?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I believe this court held as much in the Romero v. Barr case involving administrative closure. Of course, the regulations on which we rely don't specifically reference administrative closure, but the court found that they imply it. With respect to section 1240.12C, I was saying that regulation actually supports our argument because it presupposes that IJs have the general power to terminate proceedings. And even if Section 1240.12c meant what the Attorney General claims it means, the regulation only applies to IJs. It does not apply to the BIA. So under the Attorney General's reading, the BIA could not terminate proceedings even when DHS failed to sustain the charge. So the upshot, Your Honors, is that the very reason that IJs and the board can terminate proceedings when DHS fails to sustain the charges is that they possess the general authority to terminate proceedings under Section 1003.10b and 1003.1d.12. If IJs and the board and if IJs and the board possess the general authority to terminate proceedings, then whether termination is warranted must be decided on a case-by-case basis, subject, of course, to any future limitations set forth in a precedential decision from either the Attorney General or the board itself. Now, one argument that the Attorney General did not directly make, but which the court might independently consider, is that it is always appropriate and necessary to terminate proceedings when DHS fails to sustain the charges of removability, but that it is never appropriate and necessary to do so when the charges have been upheld. But neither part of that argument would be correct, because just as termination is not required when DHS fails to sustain the charges, nor is it prohibited when the charges have been sustained. Terminating proceedings is a remedy, not a right. And while termination is typically the only possible remedy when DHS fails to sustain the charges, there are at least two circumstances in which IJs and the board could reasonably decline to terminate proceedings. The first is when there are additional grounds of removability that DHS failed to lodge in the original charging document. In that scenario, an IJ may elect to continue the proceedings, or the board might decide to remand the record to give DHS a chance to lodge an additional ground of removability. A second scenario is when an alien has been convicted of a criminal offense that could make him subject to a ground of removability, but the conviction is not yet final for immigration purposes because it is still on direct appeal. In that scenario, an IJ or the board might administratively close rather than terminate the proceedings until the alien's criminal appeal has been resolved. But at the same time, just as termination is not always warranted when DHS fails to sustain the charges, it may be warranted even when DHS has sustained the charges. For reasons we explain on page 32 of our opening brief, it is possible under the immigration laws for an alien to simultaneously be removable from the United States and possess lawful immigration status. For example, aliens like my client, who crossed the border illegally, are removable under 8 U.S.C. 1182A6A1 for being present in the United States without being admitted. Now, under the INA, aliens are only deemed to have been admitted if they were authorized to enter the country through a port of entry. Aliens are not deemed to have been admitted if they acquire legal status once they are already inside the United States. So aliens who enter the country illegally technically remain removable even if they are granted asylum or some other status outside of removal proceedings that allow them to lawfully remain in the United States. And in that scenario, it would certainly be reasonable for an IJ to terminate the proceedings because it would make little sense to order the removal of an alien with lawful immigration status. Terminations could also be warranted for aliens who are removable, but who could easily obtain permanent residency from USCIS if they were not in removal proceedings. For example, take an alien who was placed in removal proceedings for overstaying his visa, but who has a US citizen spouse, one or more US citizen children, and no criminal record or adverse discretionary factors of any kind. Such an alien would be granted permanent residency in a heartbeat, either by an IJ or by USCIS. But while it could take months for their application to be approved by USCIS, it could take years for them to receive a hearing in immigration court. So in cases like that, we believe it could also be appropriate for an IJ to terminate proceedings without prejudice, of course, so that the alien could seek permanent residency directly with USCIS. But again, the court need not and should not opine on whether the termination of termination of proceedings would be appropriate in this or any other case. If the court holds that IJs and the board have the general power to terminate proceedings, it should allow the agency to determine in the first instance when termination is appropriate and necessary. The Attorney General's primary argument seems to be that it would intrude on DHS's prosecutorial authority to allow IJs to terminate proceedings against aliens when they remain subject to the charges of removability. But we believe that argument is misplaced for three reasons. First, and we think it should go without saying, that IJs would use this power quite sparingly. IJs are employees of the Attorney General who do not enjoy life tenure. So the idea that they would start terminating proceedings en masse is rather far-fetched. And even if that were to happen, DHS would have a right of appeal to the board, and the board reviews discretionary determinations de novo. And even if the board somehow ruled against DHS, DHS could then certify the case to the Attorney General himself. So as a practical matter, any intrusion on DHS's prosecutorial authority would be rather slight. Second, DHS itself has multiple agencies that sometimes work at cross purposes. As I previously mentioned, USCIS may confer asylum or other legal status on an alien that ICE is actively prosecuting in immigration. And when DHS is itself sending mixed messages about whether an alien should be allowed to remain in the country, there's no principled reason why IJs and the board should have to defer to ICE's position rather than USCIS's. And then finally, terminating proceedings over DHS's objection does not raise any separation of powers concerns because DHS and DOJ are both part of the executive branch. In fact, once DHS files a charging document with the immigration court, it is no longer able to unilaterally dismiss the case. If it wants to dismiss the case, DHS must seek leave to do so from the IJ or from the board. And if IJs and the board are not... Yes, sir.
Sorry, I had a question about this, which is there... In thinking about this argument, impermissible interference with DHS's enforcement authority, is there any sort of practical distinction between an IJ terminating a hearing and an IJ indefinitely suspending a hearing? I'm trying to figure out why this hasn't already effectively been decided by Romero, because the AG said the exact same thing in Castro-Tunk, whatever it was called, the AG decision on administrative closing said we can't allow these indefinite suspensions because that would impermissibly interfere with DHS's enforcement authority. And we were already past that in Romero. So is there anything sort of practically different between indefinitely suspending and actually terminating a proceeding for these purposes? Is there any way to distinguish Romero?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, when an IJ or the board terminates proceedings, that, of course, is the end of the proceeding. And if DHS wants to again attempt to remove the alien from the United States, they would have to file a new charging document with the immigration. By contrast, when a case is administratively closed, it is effectively suspended, held in abeyance. And if either
I understand the formal difference, but I also understand that the AG said in the original opinion, it doesn't make any practical difference because once these things are closed, they're done. They don't come back. It's over. And we held in Romero, it doesn't matter. IJs can still close these proceedings over the AG's objection that it would interfere unduly with DHS's enforcement authority. So I'm just trying to figure out whether, practically speaking, it makes any difference which one we're talking about for purposes of this argument.
Sure. I think, candidly, it is more of a legal difference than a practical difference. Although, of course, an alien who is in removal proceedings, even proceedings that are administratively closed, does have the weight, so to speak, of those removal proceedings.
I understand why it makes a difference for the petitioner, 100%. I'll let it drop. I'm just trying to figure out whether it makes a difference for DHS's potential interference with DHS's enforcement authority. But okay.
Well, I would say also, the termination we're asking for would be without prejudice, of course, DHS could always file a new charge
right.
in the future. So the point that I was making about the fact that IJs and the board don't have to grant a motion to dismiss from DHS, we believe if they're not required to do so, if they're not required to dismiss proceedings against aliens whom DHS no longer wishes to prosecute, then there is no principled reason why they can't terminate proceedings against aliens that DHS still wishes to prosecute. Now, if the court finds it unclear, yes, sir.
Oh, no, before we get there, let me ask you one question. So the way I am thinking about this problem is like, look, we already read this regulation according to its plain terms in Romero. We said it would allow an IJ generally to administratively close a proceeding, notwithstanding the fact that as a practical matter, that pretty much ends it. And so I'm trying to figure out, is there something different about termination that would mean that Romero doesn't apply here? And the only thing I can think of is that in Romero, we did sort of at least cite the long administrative practice of having IJs do these administrative closures with some BIA approval. And we don't have that here. So does that matter?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because I think you only look at agency precedent if you find the regulations ambiguous. Okay. If the text of the regulation is clear, then under our or Chevron, that is really the end of it. And we think the text of the regulations are clear, and that is especially so in light of this court's decisions in Romero and in Jimenez-Rodriguez. I see my time is up, so I will, if not, is there any more
questions? Judges have any questions? You have some time in rebuttal. Oh. Yes.
Can I just one very, no, I'm so sorry, just the sure. structure of the argument thing is, if assuming hypothetically and without, but it, if you were to prevail before us on your arguments about DACA status, and we were remanding for the agency to consider whether this proceeding should be either terminated or closed, does that mean we do not get to your alternative arguments about cancellation of removal and the continuance and the motion to reopen?
I believe even then the court should reach those arguments because if the court doesn't have to, of course, but if the request for both termination and administrative closure were denied on remand, then I think we would be back in the same position.
It'd be a little weird though, because but the remedy you want us to give you on those second set of claims is you want us to remand for the IJ to have a hearing on cancellation. But if you've prevailed on your first arguments, there's at least arguably no proceeding to remand it for. It would have to be conditional?
Well, that would be our alternative argument if on remand the request for termination and administrative closure were both denied. Then as an alternative to termination or administrative closure, my client would like an opportunity to seek cancellation of removal. But we are relatively optimistic that one of the two remedies would be granted if the court were to rule in our favor on the termination and or administrative closure issue. And of course, if the court does not want to reach those issues as a matter of judicial economy, that is of course the court.
All right, thank you, Mr. Winograd. And you have some time to reply. You pronounce it as Bayram?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you, you may proceed.
May it please the court, I am Sarah Byram, appearing on behalf of Merrick B. Garland, the United States Attorney General. This case presents four issues. The most important, of course, is this termination issue. Here on termination, petitioner states that there is no, in his brief, he states that there is no principled reason why immigration judges cannot terminate proceedings against an alien when DHS wishes to prosecute. Before this court, he has cabined that as a general power to terminate. But in essence, what he's really asking for is to give immigration judges the discretionary authority to terminate removal proceedings as they see fit. But there are two, at least two, principal reasons for why this cannot be the case. One, because we have controlling statutory authority and regulations, which the Attorney General relied on, that set out when termination is necessary, when it's required. Statutory authority sets out that immigration judges shall conduct proceedings for determining removability. So there are regulations, there are statutes that speak to this. And second, and more importantly, is for over 50 years, the agency, combined with judicial decisions of three circuits, have long held that immigration judges do not have this discretionary authority to just terminate as they see fit. He ignores this precedent in his argument. He's largely ignored it in his brief. But it starts in 1971, continues on through multiple administrations. And of course, you have the Ninth, Fifth, and the Circuit, so weighing in. So on this specific issue, on whether or not immigration judges have this general discretionary authority to just terminate when they would like, regardless of circumstances, regardless of if the alien is actually removable, what have you. There is decades of agency precedent on that, judicial precedent, and that is something that when the Attorney General promulgated SOG, this was just a continuation of that longstanding interpretation that discretionary authority to terminate is not something that is available. Now, there's no dispute that judges have an inherent authority to terminate, but that authority is cabined by the statutory authority, the regulatory authority. They are creatures of statute. They derive their authority.
In your view, what impact did the AG's July of this year decision in Cruz Valdez have on the SOG matter?
Really none, because Cruz Valdez goes to administrative closure. And what we're talking about here is termination. This also goes to Judge Harris's question. Termination and administrative closure are two different postures. We have decades of agency precedent, judicial precedent on termination. It's very different from administrative closure. And petitioner, you know, weaves in the regulations and tries to build off of what happened with Romero, Castro-Tum, Cruz, and administrative closure, but we're talking about something different here.
Counsel, can I just stop you? So the very first, I don't even know what you call these in these AG opinions, but like header number one says that consistent with matter of Castro-Tum, judges have no inherent authority to terminate or dismiss removal proceedings. And like it just seems not fair to suggest that the withdrawal of matter of Castro-Tum, which literally like the first one, two, the third word of this opinion is the matter of Castro-Tum, that the withdrawal of that opinion would have no bearing whatsoever on this question. The agency obviously thinks of these, yes, formally distinct, but very, very similar and overlapping issues, which is why the first words out of the agency's mouth are, we're relying on matter of Castro-Tum to decide this issue.
With due respect, there are some references to Castro-Tum, but the holdings of what the Attorney General said here go to termination, and they are very different concepts. Just to take a step back, termination is specifically authorized by the INA. There's regulations, there's statutes. There's a plethora of judicial precedent on termination. When you terminate a case, it disposes of it entirely. It kills the case, right? And it could prevent the Department of Homeland Security from bringing a new case or new charges depending on how it was that it was terminated. And it obviously implicates, you know, a jurisdictional scheme. But termination is a very different procedure. There is statute, there is regulation, there is judicial precedent talking about it. By contrast, administrative closure just essentially takes the case off the active docket, but it still allows for the continued prosecution of that case at some point. It still allows for DHS to pursue a final order, which of course they have the right to do, and particularly where the circumstances are that petitioner is removable, like here where he conceded his removability. And with administrative closure, you still preserve all those things. There is also nothing in the INA or the regulations that specifically authorize administrative closure, which is different from termination. And so,
well, but that's not what, counsel, that's not what the Attorney General said in matter of Castro-Tum. He said, he made the same argument you're making here. He said, look, the regulations specifically provide for continuances. This is just another form of continuance. So the specific regulatory authorization for continuances means there can't also be
a general broad authorization for these indefinite suspensions. So the exact same argument was raised there, that the specific, if there's some specific regulation that touches on it, you can't have this general authority. And we rejected that in Romero. So I don't see that as a distinction we could rely on here.
Well, with all due respect, if nothing else, the distinction is that termination specifically disposes of a case entirely, whereas administrative closure doesn't do that.
I don't think that necessarily helps you. It doesn't, the fact that it disposes of it make it even more clearly fall within this regulation, which refers to any action necessary or appropriate to dispose of a case?
Well, those regulations are not specifically addressed by the AG in matter of SOG. And he didn't need to address them because there are termination-specific regulations. So to go off that, first, I would say that these arguments that petitioner raises about these general regulations weren't raised before the agency, and no court or the board has ever found a discretionary authority to terminate based on these regulations. In addition, matter of SOG has also never been considered by any circuit. So those beyond those things, there are specific regulations for termination. And the agency looked to those, as should this court and other judicial circuits, to look at the termination-specific regulations. And we shouldn't ignore all those in favor of a general termination or a general regulation that wasn't addressed here. And we have these specific regulations. They say that immigration judges shall, make findings on inadmissibility, deportability. They shall direct removal or termination, such disposition. There's other termination-specific regulations. And so when we're talking about termination, we should be looking to those specific regulations. And the statutory and regulatory construction dictates that you're looking to specific. Specific governs the general. And that's exactly the situation we have. Petitioner would like to ignore all of this judicial precedent, all of these regulations, and essentially build off what happened in Castro Tomb, which is administrative closure and which is different. And it's also different if, again, for no other reason, we have nearly 50 years of agency precedent on these points about a lack of discretionary authority to terminate. The Ninth, the Fifth, and the Second have recognized this. And so we have these specific authorities, and these general authorities, the CFR 1003, they also say they have a limiting principle of consistent with statute and regulation, with any other authorities. We have those authorities. And so that also plays a part in why there is no discretionary authority. We're not considering, you know, this anew, or we're not looking at termination anew. It's set against this backdrop of the termination-specific regulations of statutes requiring, with the use of shall, that immigration judges make these findings of removability, decide inadmissibility, deportability, decide whether they're removable. And this is all set against the backdrop of this other precedent, these other regulations. And you have to read 100310 as consistent with other authorities and statute and regulation. And that's what we have with this other precedent.
Council, can I give you a chance to I'm having trouble following why you think this is a Chevron case. Is it your understanding that what matter of SOG held was that the governing statutes would preclude allowing termination of a proceeding if the finding of removability has been substantiated?
So we understand.
Well, I guess maybe sorry, go ahead.
No, please finish so I understand what you're asking correctly.
Well, is it your understanding that matter of SOG holds that there is some statute that would preclude the agency from giving immigration judges the authority to terminate proceedings if there hasn't been a finding that removability has not been substantiated?
Yes. So,
okay. If that is your position, can you explain to me both how come we have a regulation that clearly says they can do this if there's a naturalization petition pending, at least under certain circumstances, and also why the Attorney General said in matter of Castro-Tum that if there's been a complete failure of notice, the appropriate thing would be for an immigration judge to terminate the proceedings? Are both of those things contrary to statute?
No, because
okay.
What we have is the general statute in 1229 that says that the immigration judge shall conduct proceedings for deciding inadmissibility and deportability, and then at the conclusion shall decide whether they're removable. Those are the broader statutes, and Congress, of course, hasn't directly spoken on how or when termination may occur. But we have these regulations that have been put forth, specific regulations that outline certain circumstances when termination would be appropriate. They were exercised within the authority of the Attorney General.
I understand that the Attorney General exercised his authority, both in writing matter of Castro-Tum and in promulgating the naturalization regulation. But if those are inconsistent, you just told me that there's a statutory command that IJs may not terminate proceedings unless they first hold that removability has not been substantiated. And I'm looking at two things the AG has done that are inconsistent with the statutory command you just described to me. And I am asking you, what is going on? Do we need to enjoin that regulation? Do we need to make, I mean, what do you want us to do here?
Well, first, this case isn't about administrative closure. So I think it's important to go back again that termination is a different.
I'm talking about the part of matter of Castro-Tum that is about termination, where the Attorney General says if there has been a failure of notice, you do not have authority to indefinitely close that proceeding. What you should do is terminate it.
Yes, and the authority.
So that's the part I'm talking about.
Okay, let me go back a minute. If I misspoke and I said that the Attorney General, what he is saying is that in every case there has to be a finding of removability. What the statute says is that the immigration judge has to conduct these proceedings on admissibility, and that they should be making a finding of removability, or if they're not removable or an admissibility, and then terminate accordingly. Where you have aliens who are removable and DHS wishes to prosecute that is not a circumstance that is appropriate for an attorney general's, for an immigration judge's discretionary authority to terminate. That has been held for years. So, and you have these general authority or this general regulation in 101.3, which opposing counsel raises, that's a general statute that the agency relied on for Castro-Tum and administrative closure. We're in a different subset now. And that is general, but we also have these termination-specific regulations. And that's what we look to in this case, along with the judicial precedent. This focus on these general regulations, these two general regulations that may have been appropriate in Castro-Tum because that's what was the basis for administrative closure, is not the sole basis for termination here in this case or in any case of termination. We look to this, to the statutes that require the inadmissibility and those things. We look to the termination specific statutes that the Attorney General has out, and we look to the case law, so, and the agency precedent. So the opposing counsel has put a lot of focus on these two general regulations to piggyback off of what happened in Castro-Tum.
Okay.
But
so
these
counsel,
two regulations
counsel,
were
sorry.
Not the source.
Counsel,
of-
I'm going to understand that you're not really making a Chevron or statutory argument. You're making a regulatory argument about the circumstances under which these regulations authorize IJ termination, right? Because now we're back to the regulations. We're not talking about the statute.
If, well,
It's no big deal. I'm just trying to figure out why Chevron is in this case.
So our primary argument here is that the way that the Attorney General set this out in the discussion is that he relies on, of course, 1103 for the authority, but also 1229A, which requires that immigration judges conduct proceedings and make a finding as to removability. And so based on that, and against this backdrop of the statutory obligation that immigration judges have to find removability, colors the immigration judge's decision on termination, and that there isn't this general authority, this discretionary authority to terminate, where you have, in light of the statutory obligation to determine removability, and in light of judicial precedent that has never allowed for termination on a general discretionary basis as immigration judges see fit, regardless of, you know, removability, regardless if there's any eligibility for relief.
Sorry, counsel, I keep interrupting and I apologize. I just, before you are out of time, I wanted to ask you just a few questions about the continuance question in this case, if I can sort of take you into another area, and the sufficiency of the agency's explanation. And you say in your brief, on page 34, that the agency provides these explanations, and there are four sites for the explanations. Two of them are to the same form where the IJ checks a box that says, the box says, the motion is denied for failure to show good cause. You're not saying that that's the explanation, right?
Well, that was the conclusion.
Right, so that's not the explanation. Okay, so the one of them, so you cite that two times, and then you cite the part in the IJ hearing where she says, and I'm gonna get this wrong, I denied the continuance because he doesn't have current relief. So he's seeking a continuance because he doesn't have current relief and he wants to try to get it. And the IJ says, I'm denying it because you don't have current relief. Is that an explanation?
So the immigration judge, and then the board reviewed this de novo.
No, I know, but I'm just asking, just going through the explanations you cite in your brief.
Well, because he was seeking a continuance for relief that was speculative.
That's not what she says. She says, I understand. I'm just going through the things in your brief that the IJ said. So she checks the box, and that is cited twice. The third citation is to where the IJ says, I'm denying it because you don't already have relief. And I'm asking you, is the government's position that it's cited in your brief, is that an adequate explanation for the denial of a continuance?
With due respect, we're looking to the board's decision.
Okay, so I'm gonna take that as a no, and now we're down to the board. And the board says it's an indeterminate amount of time. But as to the continuance pending the mother's application, the evidence submitted by the petitioner says that the agency says this will be done in between 6 months and a year. And in fact, it is done in 6 months. And the explanation doesn't address that very important fact. When it says this is indeterminate, it does not address what seems to be a pretty important fact going to that. So why is that okay?
The agency, in denying it, he had this specific, more specific period of time. The agency, you know, denied it based on these other things. But I would point to briefly that regardless of the specific wording of the continuance, as we know, petitioner's mom has now got her LPR status, and he has now submitted an application for cancellation of removal, but that was denied. So even if you give him the continuance, he got a second bite at the apple for his cancellation of removal, and he has not submitted any evidence going to prima facie eligibility, and the agency denied reopening on that basis. So even going to the continuance or to some degree the administrative closure, he has now that opportunity for cancellation of removal. He submitted an application. He did not submit any evidence to go with that application showing prima facie eligibility. The agency was reasonable to deny it on that basis. And here now, before this court even, petitioner doesn't give any indication of what kind of evidence he's going to be bringing now to show that he is eligible and warrants cancellation of removal. So he has this second bite at the apple, and the continuance in the administrative closure, which largely sought for this cancellation of removal relief, and he's got that. He had that bite, and he still didn't bring forth what he needed to bring forth. So that, to some degree, continues to undermine the basis that he had for the continuance and the administrative closure. And I see I'm out of time.
Any further questions from the panel? No. All right, Mr. Monograd, you have 4 minutes in reply.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Attorney General, of course, relies mostly on what it views as favorable precedent. I would simply point out that none of the cases on which the Attorney General relies address Section 1003.10b or 1003.1d12, nor are they really accompanied by any substantive analysis. They're more akin to what the Supreme Court has described in other contexts as a drive-by jurisdictional rule. And I think those decisions really beg the question of why it is that IJs and the board can terminate proceedings in circumstances where it's uncontroversial that they have the authority to do so. One question that the Attorney General still has not answered is what gives the BIA the authority to terminate proceedings when DHS fails to sustain the charges? The only regulation on which the Attorney General relies is 8 CFR 1240.12c. But that only applies to IJs. So under the Attorney General's argument, the BIA itself wouldn't have the authority to terminate proceedings. Likewise, that we still haven't had an answer from the Attorney General about what an IJ should do when an alien is removable for having entered the country unlawfully, but is then granted a U visa by USCIS. And then they are at the same time removable, but they have lawful status.
And I thought opposing counsel told me or gave me the impression that in the government's view, Cruz Valdez has nothing to do with what we're talking about today. What's your view of Cruz Valdez?
I would respectfully disagree. I think it undermines, of course, it undermines the analysis in matter of SOG for the same reason that Judge Harris identified. But I think it also makes clear that if the court sends the case back for consideration of administrative closure, that my client would have a very realistic shot of having his request granted. And if I could move to the administrative closure issue, we think that that's another basis on which the court should grant the petition for review, because the board simply failed to consider that aspect of my client's request for administrative closure. There's no dispute that the board overlooked the request. And there's no dispute that the ordinary remedy under the ordinary remand rule is to send the case to the agency to consider a request in the first instance. The Attorney General, the only argument they raised in their brief was that a remand would be futile because the board would be unlikely to grant my client's request for administrative closure. But we find that argument perplexing because it's quite common for DACA recipients to have their cases administratively closed. We submitted with our opening brief 7 examples cases in which the board had administratively closed proceedings against DACA recipients. And given matter of Cruz Valdez and the enforcement priorities of the current administration, it's quite possible that DHS would no longer oppose administrative closure if the case was remanded. So I think far from being the rare exception to the ordinary remand rule, this case is a quintessential example of when a court should allow an agency to address an issue in the first instance. And then finally, just getting to the continuance issue, as Judge Harris noted, the only reason the IJ provided for denying my client's request was that he was not presently eligible for any form of relief from removal. But that reasoning was nonsensical because my client had already been eligible for cancellation of removal. He would not have needed to request a continuance in the first place. And then finally, just to return to the question that Judge Harris asked at the close of my opening, I would say that if the court rules in our favor on the continuance argument and finds that the agency abused its discretion in denying my client's request for a continuance, then it would not need to reach the separate argument relating to the motion to remand, because in that case, the case would have to be remanded back to the agency, and at a minimum, he would be entitled to a hearing on his application if his request for termination or administrative closure. If there are no further questions.
All right. Any questions? No. Panel doesn't have any. Thank you very much for your arguments, and we ordinarily come down and greet you if we were in Richmond, but since we're virtual, we can't do it, so let's accept this as a greeting from the three of us. Y'all have a nice day.
Thank you. Thank you.